American Inc. presents Wake Up with Patty Catter. Now, here's your host, Patty Catter.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me again today. Last week, my guest, Bogdan was on the show. He talked about how it was living in Kyiv and in Ukraine and a little bit about his story. And this week, we actually have somebody named Daniel on the show. Daniel is from a nonprofit organization, AMR. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Today, we're going to just talk a little bit about what you're doing because it's a lot different than Bogdan. Last week, we talked with him about how it was being a civilian living in Ukraine and then all of a sudden one day waking up to war. And you're on the opposite side. You're a military veteran. You served in the Marine Corps and you are helping the Ukrainian people. And I want you just to tell our listeners first a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to go into what you're doing now in Ukraine.
Sure. I'm originally born and raised in Maryland in a place called Prince George's County. It's about 15 minutes, 20 minutes from the capital. So I'm on the southeast side of DC, right inside the Beltway. So growing up, I was in the 8% of the county that was white. And I didn't know that that would serve me so well, being used to being one of the only. But going forward into the military and serving in areas around the globe where I definitely stand out, it served me well. I came from a humble background. My mom was mainly a single mom most of the time raising me. She worked as a secretary at the Southern Baptist Association in Prince George's County. And I was raised as a Southern Baptist. We were on government cheese and government peanut butter, which is weird because I still love peanut butter to this day. And it's hard to find overseas. Other than that, I would say that I always loved school. I always loved the sciences. That was my escape, was kind of reading anything I could get my hands on from the thrift store, whether it be encyclopedias or anything like that. I'm definitely a nonfiction lover. That helped me because after my military service, I was trained as an electrician and as a paramedic and currently finishing my last year as a nurse practitioner student at George Washington University.
Wow. So when you were a kid, did you realize that you were going to join the military? Is that something you really wanted to do or what?
That's a good question. I think that honestly, I always felt that calling. I can remember being 6 and 7 playing outside of my grandmother's house in the backyard with my cousin. And I remember we would be playing basically commando in the woods. What's interesting is as soon as I found out that I could get paid to do the things I like to do, which was growing up in Boy Scouts, it was wilderness survival. It was playing with knives and learning archery and riflery. Marksmanship kind of was something that I fell in love with when I was 12. So I think as a little boy, it was just a dream. But now that I look back, it's definitely something that's always been a calling in my life, something drawing me to service.
Yeah, that's interesting. Did you have any military family?
I did. On my maternal side, my grandfather was actually in the Air Corps before it was the Air Force. And I want to say he was a cryptologist because before he passed away, I had an opportunity to take him to the Cryptology Museum outside Fort Meade, Maryland, where the NSA is. And he was absolutely in love and he definitely knew things that I didn't. And even on, I want to say my biological father's side, because I didn't really grow up with my biological father. I was adopted, so even the name I have today is not my birth name. He was a veteran of Cambodia and Laos, serving in the secret war in Vietnam during that era. He was a Green Beret. He never talked about his service. I only had like 80 visitations with my biological father. He was an alcoholic, and he wasn't really the fun type. So I know that on my mom and my dad's side, I definitely had that kind of lineage of service. So that might have something to do with it.
Yeah, I bet. They say it runs in your DNA. So maybe.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm. Me too. So let's fast forward to today. And I want to know, how did you get involved with wanting to help people in Ukraine? Can you tell a little bit of your backstory there?
Certainly. So what brought me to Ukraine only about 3 weeks ago now, which it seems like years, is I was in a relationship online in terms of a friendship with an individual who is a functional health practitioner. Her name is Bree, and we had a line of communication because she was involved in like similar interests that I had with veteran rights, veteran health problems like toxic exposure, side effects of service related to being around burn pits, being on some of these medications that have horrible side effects. And she basically reached out because she knew that I had a background in the military and working abroad post-military. And she kind of just said, I'm sure you have the networks. If you wanted to go over there, I have a partnership with Stanford University, because what she had was a pilot program where veterans would be cycled through a functional health practitioner that's not paid under Western Insurance or the VA to see if there was results from that. And she said, I'm sure I can get them to donate 20 pallets of medical supplies. And it kind of took off from there. She thought it was a wild idea, even though she was the one who broached me with it. And I said, I have the connections from my government and other service overseas. So I thought that if I could leverage that, and I could leverage the veteran community and the intelligence community to come together and kind of do something about the current conflict in Ukraine, then I would regret it if I didn't.
Absolutely. Now tell me, were you at all nervous, or what did your family think about this? Because not everybody has what it takes to go to a war-torn country, especially if technically our troops aren't there.
Yeah, that's a hard position to kind of tell family and navigate. And I gotta say, I'm not the best at that. I'm more the Irish goodbye person. In my last 15 years of service, I've only just recently kind of come out to my family that after the military, I've still been extensively involved in government work. It's always kind of just been me ghosting for years at a time, and not really fair to my family, but I always thought it was easier than making them worry about me. Looking back now, I feel that's kind of selfish. So even when this rolled around, I kind of waited to tell them until basically the ball dropped. But at this point in my life, they're used to my crazy self, especially being a Marine and being someone who's been in 66 countries officially now after 15 years, most of them not the nicest countries. They're kind of used to it. So they don't really worry about me. They think it's crazy. They've been my biggest supporter. They've donated. I can't express how I feel in terms of the support system that I have. And I really think that is what allows me to do what I do. I don't have anybody who is telling me, what are you doing? Why are you leaving here? This is crazy. Most people, I think, want to do more and they wish they could. And for me, I'm just doing what I can, where I can, and how I know how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely can understand that. I think that most of the men that are going over to Ukraine, I don't think I know any women off the top of my head right now, but really they don't have a lot of strings attached to them. They're just able to go pick up and go and get things done. And I know I'm appreciative towards that. I am really proud of you and thankful for you and others who've stepped up to the plate to help these people who really need it. And the cool thing about you is you're actually helping with medical treatment, right?
Correct. So what Austere Medical Relief Group is doing is providing direct support and training to the medical systems that find themselves in conflict zones. So we hope to have a longevity way past this. I hope to maybe contribute in areas of Kurdistan and other parts of the world that are still in conflict to basically provide not only military veterans who are medical providers or special operations medical providers who are used to operating in these environments, but I want to pair them with highly trained civilians like surgeons and doctors and paramedics who can help basically improve the capacity of these medical systems. Because what we're finding right now is they're burdened by the fact that they've not had any experience with these type of casualties or wounds before. Even during peacetime, they don't have the access to firearms that we have in America. So they're not seeing the level of trauma even in peacetime that would kind of prepare them for these level of casualties and this trauma system. So not only do they want the training, but we're providing neurosurgeons and doctors who will not only be training them, but working side by side, along with the stuff that you already are aware of, that we're providing TCCC, which is tactical casualty combat care, to their frontline medics and doctors and their territorial defense members.
You know, I was talking to my guest last week, and he was only, I want to say he's 26, I think. And to him, this is the most tragic thing that he's been through in his life. You know, he said that he just remembers like walking around after the bomb started dropping, and, you know, there's amputees and people who have lost limbs, and they did not even have simple things like tourniquets available. So are you supplying the medical equipment? You mentioned that you had 20 pallets of medical equipment. What exactly is your organization doing? What do they need, and how can people help?
That is a great question. And I think that people can help not only by donating to us on our website or social media through our PayPal and Venmo, but more specifically, and I know me personally, with my background, I've never ever had to do fundraising before. So talking about money feels dirty to me, but I know exactly what I need on the ground to provide medical assistance. And I know what our partners here, the medical providers here in this area need, which is, like you said, tourniquets. They don't have them. What they now have is worse than Soviet era Russian tourniquets that are elastic rubber bands. Blood is slippery in real life for people who don't know. You're going to be stressed out. You're going to be amped up. These things are elastic. Even under ideal conditions, they don't function as tourniquets properly. And so they have a critical need in terms of medical equipment. And then when we get them the equipment, the know-how. So what we are doing, to answer your question, is not only using our partnerships, but donors like individuals and companies in Minnesota who are donating 26 pallets. Keith is out there in St. Cloud, Minnesota, with an organization where he's not only a paramedic, but he's in control of some of their inventory and has allowed us to take 26 pallets of it and bring it over here. So chest tubes, surgical procedures that we use in special operations medicine and austere and military medicine, they're helping us plug into these units, into these hospitals. So what we want to do is give them the training and ideally be able to have every member who graduates our training not only get that frontline individual first aid, basically med kit, but also provide the doctors and hospitals with equipment that right now they've already run out of.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is one of the hardest things you've seen, or the most difficult thing that you're dealing with personally over there?
That's a really good question, because it probably would surprise most people that the thing that is hardest for me is being in these hospitals and frontline units. And oftentimes, obviously, it's no surprise that we're getting rocketed and bombed. So some of these conversations are going down to the bunker where you're seeing doctors and surgeons chain smoking, not processing anything from the last 30 days. The hardest thing for me is that, coming from the last 15 years of war, to be quite frank, I know that they haven't even had the chance to decompress in the last 30 days. They are just wired. They aren't even basically respecting social cues. They're jumping over each other, grown men and surgeons, just to ask me questions, show me pictures on their phone of white phosphorus burns. And I mean, they're just pupils the size of dimes when they're talking to you. And you know that even when you're answering them, they're not listening. It's just all flashing in front of their face. They think that they've been trained, and now they're seeing stuff that is showing them that they don't have the experience to deal with this. And I think that that definitely is a burden to them in terms of mental health. So the mental health effects that I'm seeing right now for these frontline medical providers, and even people in the rear like Lviv, who are getting rocketed, and they're only 17 kilometers from the Polish border, and they're dealing with injury patterns and patients that they can't do anything for. That's kind of been the worst thing that I've seen so far.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would you tell those people out there? I don't know if you've heard this, but This is probably one of the hardest things that I've felt at home as a civilian, listening to people stick up for Putin or try to say that this is all an act. Everybody's an actor over there. I'm sure you've heard it, right?
Unfortunately, I have. I know exactly what you're talking about. And this is something that has been a new paradigm shift for me. I like to think that I'm very mentally agile and flexible and anchored to nothing and open to everything. But now stepping into the world of being a humanitarian, which I've volunteered for years with teams like Team Rubicon and their international medical team in between combat deployments. And I've walked the humanitarian line, but being a co-founder in an organization now, I now have to learn that to work with United Nations and World Health Organization and Red Cross, that I have to be apolitical and unbiased, which is very hard for me because I'm seeing on the front lines cluster bombs and white phosphorus being used intentionally, in my opinion, against civilians. And that is something that is sort of a moral dilemma. And I wish people would understand, if they were here firsthand, that it's not as black and white as they would think, that there are multiple shades of gray, and it's very disturbing. And it's very, very clearly a situation where human rights are being violated. There is no if and or buts with what I'm seeing in the hallways of these hospitals and the bodies that are being pulled off the streets.
Mm-hmm. And this is actually one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on my show, because my listeners really trust my choice of guests. And when my business partner put me in touch with you, I knew that you were literally there in Ukraine. You're there right now, correct?
Correct. I'm currently in the east of Ukraine, and we have individuals who are going to be directly on the Russian border in these freshly liberated places that were just liberated today. And it's very unfortunate that United Nations is only coming in through the Russian side, and a lot of the organizations, and everybody has their own theories, and I don't get into that being a humanitarian in this role right now, but it is very disturbing to the Ukrainians and everybody involved that nobody is this far east in Ukraine. We are one of the few organizations that's this far east on the ground, and it's kind of disturbing that the aid is still not coming in.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's very disturbing. I have spent many nights up with people trying to help on the back end of logistics and planning. And, you know, if there's anything that you could say to people listening right now to have them donate, I mean, where do you go to donate financially to your organization?
They can go to www.theamrgroup.org. They can also go to AMRGOps, separated by an underscore, which is our social media page. And they can find the same links to our social media. They can find us on PayPal and Venmo. And if they're willing to really want to buy something that they know is going to be on the ground with us and that we need your basic trauma frontline medical supplies. We need tourniquets. If you are willing to reach out to us or myself personally and buy tourniquets and mail them to our volunteers before they come over, because as you just mentioned, the logistics of this right now are still a nightmare, because the major organizations and Western governments, they're behemoths and they are very slow to mobilize. So if people are willing to do that, that would make all the difference. I would rather have your tourniquets, which I'm going to buy with donations anyways, to basically have our people hand carry into Ukraine through Romania and Hungary.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, I guess, what through all of this, what have you learned so far about the Ukrainian people? I think that's my first question about that.
I mean, it's really interesting, but one of the reasons why I fell in love with volunteering so many years ago, not just as a paramedic when I'm back stateside to keep my medical skills up, but also over here in these roles, is that it's almost like a Charles Dickens story. You definitely see the best of times and the worst of times in terms of people who come out to military bases and volunteer, even when the ranks are already filled, regular individuals who are filling sandbags just while walking their dogs, they see other community members doing it and they step up. I see the resiliency and the strength in people in this time where they don't have any experience with this type of warfare. This is all out war. There is no safety anywhere in Ukraine right now. And they are holding on to hope and their strength because they believe they're doing what is right and they're fighting for something worthy.
Yeah, I did ask my guest that was on last week, I asked him how he was holding up. And he said, I'm holding up okay right now, but we never know if the Russian military is going to come down our street next and do something like they did in Bucha, which I'm sure that you know about, right?
Correct. And unfortunately, this is a new role for me too, because I'm used to being a leader in combat zones. I'm not used to being a leader with civilians in combat zones. And I now have to worry, kind of in reference to what I was mentioning earlier, where if we come out to be favoring one side and Russian checkpoints just start popping up all over Ukraine like they have, I have to worry now about the safety of our civilian volunteers who aren't used to this type of brutal warfare and savagery. There is no holds bar against humanitarian organizations right now, to our knowledge, which is why so many organizations are hesitant to go any farther east in Ukraine than they currently are.
Now, is there a way we can pressure government to do more? Or, I mean, I don't really like to get political on my shows, but what can we do?
That is actually a great question, because individuals, if they did want to help the behemoth of our amazing government move faster and mobilize faster, what they could do is reach out to their local and high level representatives. So not just their state representatives, like their senators, but also their congressmen. If they wanted to reach out and actually make a difference here on the ground, they could pressure and write letters, and they will hopefully honor those requests of their constituents. Because what we have a problem with is getting this non-lethal aid into Ukraine. It's been rubber stamped. It's been approved. We haven't seen it. We haven't seen these tourniquets making it to their way on the ground, these needed medications making their way into these hospitals. It just hasn't moved. They've seen it on the news, and it's already been shifted, I've been told, on our media to raising gas prices and other things that are more of a local concern. They've already basically put out the message that, oh yeah, we've sent money, we're helping Ukraine. Ukrainians are wondering where it's at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is really, really frustrating. I know a few people. I'm going to make some phone calls this afternoon too. So my last question about the Ukrainian people is this. I have a lot of listeners, and I know that some people from Ukraine are tuning in and they're listening, and I've helped try to mentor some of them. But what would you tell those who are listening right now?
If there are Ukrainians listening right now, I would tell them to hold on to the strength that they've been showing to the world, because it's working. It's getting individuals like myself, not only veterans, but people who have the skills and are willing to travel to come help out in this situation. In just the next few weeks, we will have another 10 Americans on the ground, including trauma and neurosurgeons, who are going to be working side by side to do everything that they can to help decrease the burden of everybody in this conflict. It is something that we appreciate in terms of the hospitality they're giving us and the thanks they're giving us, because we are thanking them right back. We're thanking them for everything they're doing, because what we believe, and we want Ukrainians to know, we believe this is not just their fight right now. This is the world's fight, because Ukraine is not the only country that we anticipate to see this type of all-out war in the next 48 months. So they are basically holding up the tide for all of Europe right now. And it is kind of sad to see the lack of response on the ground from the Western governments that have already pledged support.
Now, I hate to bring this up, but I think I'm going to. And the fact is, I looked at my stats last week, and I noticed that I have people from Russia listening to my show. And so that said, what can we tell the Russian people? I actually had a young man from Russia that I was in communication with before the war broke out. And maybe a week afterwards, well, let me go back. So I was talking with him in communications with him and how he was disagreeing with the way Putin was and how he was trying to run their country. And then the war started it. And this kid basically contacted me again and said, did you know you've been brainwashed? Did you realize that we're still in World War II? The World War II never ended. Literally, these Russians are being brainwashed. What would you say to somebody who might be listening? Because I do know that there are a lot that don't agree with that agenda. What can we say to them?
I think the only thing we can really give as advice is to be skeptical, to question everything, to look for multiple perspectives. Don't just watch their local media outlets. Look at others, France 24, Al Jazeera's, as many perspectives as they can get. That's not a Western American perspective, I think would help. Because even in my line of work, I often have to look at geopolitical angles from multiple perspectives. And I think maybe hopefully that can bring in something if they do believe that Western media is tainted. That's okay. Just be skeptical and still look for as many perspectives as possible. Because the disinformation campaign from all governments is just a side effect of government. We have propaganda. I'm a Marine. I know I've been indoctrinated. What I believe is one of the best freedom-loving countries in the world. And because of that, I know that when I speak on the ground to Ukrainians here, and I'm about 4 hours roughly from the Russian border right now, I'm pretty far east. I have individuals who I've been working with this entire time who have relatives who are living on the other side of the border, and they're telling them to get out now because they believe that their government is denazifying Ukraine, that Ukrainians have a large problem with Nazis. And these Nazis are raping young women and teenage girls, and they're doing all of these atrocities. And as you said, they believe it hasn't stopped since the last war that they had with Ukraine and after World War II. And I think that their disinformation campaign is working because it's totally gotten a large majority of the populace there to support the current military operations. And I think that that's tragic.
I agree. And honestly, I think that that's why some people are listening to my show more so from Russia the last couple of weeks. I had listeners before, but I think a lot of them are still tuning in. And like I said, I had that one teenager reach out to me. And I think there's some people who are questioning it and doubting it and don't really know what to do. And I don't really think we have a great answer for them right now either. I mean, you know, they're kind of stuck in a hard situation where they'll be put in prison for expressing their concerns. And right there is a red flag, if you ask me.
And just the location that you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. Bucha, and mm-hmm. if you were to look up Sumy, if you were to do that from an IP address, which I use VPNs for work a lot, like Proton VPN, if you change the country of origin, if you were to Google search images of Bucha from Russia right now, you would see nothing but beautiful tourist pictures. If you searched it from a Western country, you would see nothing but the destruction and devastation that is these places right now. And I can confirm that that is what they are right now. They are just totally annihilated, and they are wild dogs and animals who have been left to fend for themselves, and they're now eating the remains of human corpses. That's the reality of war that I've seen in numerous places, and it's the same thing here, and it's a public health concern because they don't have body bags to pick up these bodies anymore. And so it's no different than the bodies floating in the water in Katrina. It's a problem, but if you Google search these locations right now, like Sumy and Bucha, you would see very different results in Google depending on where you search from. And I think that's important for all of our viewers, both American, Western, and Russian, and Chinese. We should all come together and realize that things are not always as they appear.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Daniel, please give us your website one more time and your social media.
Sure. Our website is www.theamrgroup.org. You can also find us on Instagram. That's the air raid sirens. At AMRG_ops. O-P-S.
Okay, go get yourself safe right now. Because I don't want you up here anymore. Go. But thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll catch you soon. Okay, Daniel, you stay safe.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for spreading the awareness on this issue.
Absolutely. You take care of yourself, and contact me after to make sure everything's good. Okay.
Yeah, we will.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you everybody for tuning in. And I'm going to have the website information for Daniel on the screen for those listening or watching, and then in the notes for those listening. But I will catch you all later. And Daniel, you get out of here. Thank you again, everybody. And I'll have an update for you after the show, after I hit stop recording and after I hear back from Daniel. I've never really had a show end abruptly like this, but obviously there's a reason for it. And I will be in contact with you all to let you all know that hopefully Daniel is safe after this. Take care, everybody. And please remember what's actually really important right now in your life, and kind of take time to slow down and remember that there's a lot of people out there who are struggling and they need our help right now. So please go to their website, Daniel's website, and I encourage everybody to make a donation or to try to help in some way.
Thank you for listening to Wake Up with Patty Catter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
An American Inc. podcast.
Be sure to join the private Wake Up with Patty Catter Facebook group to interact directly with Patty.
I love being a part of such a great community.
Don't forget to follow Patty on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Patty Catter. And make sure to subscribe to the show.